We are a nation of laws and rights. We are also a nation where there are some who want to deny a person their rights and fairness under those laws. This can happen in a small town just as easily as it can happen in an international scenario. My next guest is an attorney who for decades has taken on cases which are under bright lights as well as holding importance for the rights of not just his clients, but for others as well. He presents the backgrounds and paths of several of his cases in his book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases. He's been a federal prosecutor, defense attorney. He's a member of the California Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame. Jim Brosnahan, thank you so much for being here today, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
JimBrosnahan.com. Learn more about his life, his book, and believe me, it's a book you'll want to read, not just for the what it presents, but the whys and hows that he explains in addition to that. We were talking before we started here on the air, Jim. You meant this to be an educational book. You didn't it's great to have a hey, look what I did storytelling time, but your stories have a great purpose, and I want to congratulate you on presenting it in a way that the non-lawyer person can easily and efficiently absorb.
I'm so pleased you picked that up, because I got some very good advice when I started. It was very blunt from a writer and a well-known person in the writing world. He says, it's not about you. It's not about you at all. It's about the reader. And I took that advice and tried to adhere to it by never, I think, really preaching, but rather to bring the reader into 19 chapters involving a case, each one of them picked from the 150 trials that I had and arguments in the U.S. Supreme Court, by giving them scenes. And I was trying to take them there and tell them little things, like in the Supreme Court they have quill pens on the desk, or big things like I was in a Mexican jail representing a Mexican widow who was indicted because she worked with the Catholic Church to help refugees on the Mexican side of the border. So also prosecuted Caspar Weinberger, Secretary of Defense. And so each chapter is about a case and the rights of Native Americans, women's rights. I've got some cases there about those in the early days and all that. So I'm so glad you had me on.
I want to go back to that story that you referenced about the woman in the Mexican prison, the work that she was doing. That was one of my favorite stories, too. I'm not doing much of a spoiler here, but the scene where she asked the judge if he spoke Spanish, and when he said he didn't, she remarked how, through an interpreter, that she was being judged by someone who can't speak her language. But that story brings to mind a question. Are you always going to be an advocate for your client, or do you have to put their cause before a client every so often just to win the case for the client?
No, the cause is secondary, and that's a firmly held view on my part, and I think most lawyers adhere to that idea. The client is one, the major consideration of your tactics and the way you do it. It does happen that the client has taken a position because of a cause. And one time or another, I was in, I almost want to say every cause. And, the NAACP or women's rights or whatever it was. But I've seen lawyers occasionally who let the cause dominate. I had a case involving Northern Ireland. And the boys, as they call them, came to see me, and they said, we don't think you're the right lawyer. And I said, well, I am the right lawyer, and he wants me to represent him. And so you make a very good point. I think a lawyer can get lost very quickly if they don't see a conflict between the interest of the client, as the client is telling you, with the cause. You got to be very careful about that.
out of the cases that you feature in Justice at Trial, I mean, when you're going through the case, you're always in the here and now. But when it was over and done with, is there any case in the book that you look back on and at that time at the end and you said to yourself, wow, this is really going to resonate in a lot of ways?
Well, yes. I tried to pick them, actually. They cover 60 years of trial practice from the very beginning. But I tried to pick each one to reflect issues which are current. And you raise a very, very good point in terms of the importance of it. Now, I'll give you one example that New Jersey has a commission for the drawing of the lines for Congress. So does California. I think our two states are among the six, last time I knew when I was writing the book, who have a commission. Well, the commission is far superior to the legislators drawing their own districts. And I'm sure your listeners are quite aware of all the turmoil about legislators drawing the district so their state will be a certain way in favor of their party. It's a terrible problem. Well, I argued the constitutionality of redistricting in the California Supreme Court, and we got a unanimous opinion of that. And I take the reader into the courtroom, what that was like, what the questions were from the judges, as I do in the U.S. Supreme Court. I had two constitutional cases in the U.S. Supreme Court. I take the reader, I tried very hard to take the reader in there so that they're sitting in the front row and they're seeing what happens when Justice Berger asks you a question, or Justice O'Connor asked me a question and all of that. And the issues in both of those cases were very important. One was privacy, and the other was whether the legislature can dictate to political parties where they have to meet, believe it or not, or how long they can meet, and in some cases, who could be the people on their committee, all of which we did get thrown out.
Talking with Jim Brosnahan, his book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles, Groundbreaking Cases, jimbrosnahan.com. The website you're listening to, Issues and Ideas. It is a collection of great stories of featuring people that you know of, and even more importantly, I think, people that you really need to know about, and Jim does tell their stories in his work and in Justice at Trial. You mentioned the judges. Much like a hitter in baseball, if they want to be a success, they study the pitchers that they're facing. Do lawyers have to study the judges so they can know, for lack of a better phrase, how to work the courtroom?
Yes. And automatic. Okay, you might be in front of a judge in a kind of case at home that you know all about. You might know the local ones. But as soon as you go to the next county, who's that judge? And now there are so many judges. So I kind of fixate on who is this judge. I call other lawyers. What is he like? What are his aspects? How does he feel about criminal cases, a lot of which I tried? How about civil cases? How about a divorce? You had a divorce case in front of him. I have a divorce case. What is he or she, what are they really like? Well, judges, by and large, they're accused now across the board of being political, and there are examples brought up even on the U.S. Supreme Court where you do wonder about certain things. But in fact, there's many more cases which there's two parts to the case. One is the political discussion going on outside the courthouse, and the second one is a legal issue in the Supreme Court, which, by the way, is related to a political argument. My experience is a great many judges understand very well that they're not sitting as a Republican, they're not sitting as a Democrat. we have had ideology in recent years. There's always been some. But now you have judges sitting, and they watch very closely what the U.S. Supreme Court is doing. I'm thinking, this is a bipartisan comment on my part. I'm not taking sides. But on the area of religion in law, the lower courts, some of them, are looking at that, and they're trying to guess, where is this court, where is the Supreme Court going to go? So these are the influences that the Supreme Court has. It's irrelevant for you. So I just finished a 50-page article. I'm not sure anybody's going to read it. But it's about what the law ought to be and how judges think. And I just had a good time writing it.
Jim's book is just amazing. As you heard, you're hearing here, he is a great educator, and he does so as well with his book, Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles, and Groundbreaking Cases. I think above everything, sure you get some details about the process, about moments of time and even history that Jim and his work was involved with. But I think what one of the great takeaways is from Justice at Trial is you'll understand what good representation and right representation is all about, because that was what Jim always had as his foundation. And as shown by the results and the verdicts, little tip, by the way, I don't think there's a lawyer around who was ever comfortable when the jury's walking back into the room, and Jim's confessing about that too. But you also get insight into a process that is a right that we have to do everything we can to make sure it's always treated fairly. Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles, Groundbreaking Cases. Learn more about Jim, his book, his work, jimbrosnahan.com. Jim, it was a thrill talking with you in education, reading your work, and I thank you for everything that you've given to our legal system that kept it fair, just, and right. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.